Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. You know, one of the things we're doing with the webinar series, the Ascendo Reliability webinar series, is I moved to go to webinar. And it's not perfect. It's okay as a platform. But one of the things that's in it, in the setup, was the ability to say, do you have a question, you know, for this topic or just in general? And so for whatever reason, and this is a ding to our podcast listeners, so hopefully they don't turn us off right at this point, but the people that attend the webinars, given the opportunity when they're registering for the webinar, they're already at their keyboard, they ask a question. And it's about a third of the people that register ask a question. So I got tons of questions. Now, I know there's a lot of overlap with our dear podcast listeners, so you guys are okay, but you're not in front of a keyboard. And I understand that many of you in the podcast world, listening world, are in your car, or you're out walking the dog, or you're not at a keyboard. So I understand. So this question may have come from a podcast listener that happened to be attending one of the webinars, but it caught my eye, and I sent it to you, Carl, to think about was, what does it take to become an expert reliability engineer? Which is different than how do I manage my career or how do I get started? It's that, how do I get better at what I'm doing, is the way I interpreted it.
Yeah, and then the word expert is an important word, because a lot of people don't consider themselves experts. And so what does it take? To me, it's a gradation. Mm-hmm. It's not like suddenly you wake up some morning and, aha, I finally did it. I'm an expert.
Well, yeah, you can make a little badge and hang it on your yes. lapel and to say right. expert. And you can call yourself an expert. You know, I don't think that's how it works, though, in my mind.
No, it doesn't. Let's start off with that. But it is a gradation of expertise. And really, it comes down to more like skills. And so we can talk about skills, but the skills are in different areas. You can be very skilled in Weibull analysis, but not skilled in HALT, let's say. Mm-hmm. And so you can be moderately skilled in lots of things. So I don't know that there's one place where you become an expert. I think, to me, it has always been a path that you start out from wherever you are, and then you set your goals for where you want to be, and then you walk the path. And that'll be a path of lifelong learning. You never totally get there. When I go to RAMS each year, I'm attending a lot of the sessions just to keep my learning up. Mm-hmm. So I think the subject of expertise or the subject of skills is one where you internalize the journey rather than the end result.
You know, I look at expertise, I'm thinking of that the professor in the ivory tower that's the world-renowned expert at, accelerated life testing degradation analysis for destructive testing. It's a very narrow piece, and they have the equivalent of 15 PhDs in it, and they're the world expert at that. But I then paint that picture as they also write only technical papers, and they're absolutely horrible. When you mention RAMS and presentations, they're the one that puts everybody to sleep, spends 15 minutes talking about the intro and all of the math nomenclature, and then show one formula and they run out of time. Where there's
right.
So you can be academically very proficient at something, which I'm not picking on all of our professor friends, but I'm illustrating that that's a piece of it. The skills piece is a part of it. You have to be able to apply it, and you have to be able to help other people apply it. I think that differentiates a person that's good at their job. I can set up and run a test and do the analysis, but if I can't explain it to anybody else, or if I can't teach you how to do it, nobody's going to come to me for advice. So what distinguishes an expert for me is that your peers and your colleagues come to you for support and advice and coaching. I think you get to the point where that occurs naturally. They are recognizing you as the expert, then bestows that expert aura around you. You can't just say, I'm the expert in this. No, other people have to bestow that.
Very, very good. I agree completely. So let's stipulate that expertise needs to have two aspects.
Okay.
One is the influencing communication, interaction aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And another is the technical skills aspect. And maybe we could do this in a two-part podcast where today let's talk about the communication skills, the interaction with people, the ability to influence, the ability to share your knowledge with others. And then maybe on the next podcast, talk about the technical skills aspect. That's also very important because you can't have one without the other, really, in my opinion. It really takes both because if you are just the world's greatest expert technically, but can't communicate very well your ideas and concepts with people, that limits the value of the expertise. On the other hand, if you're really good at communicating but don't have technical skills, you end up like a used car salesman trying to pitch something without there's no there.
That's right. And, yeah, I'm thinking of I was going to do politicians, but I think you took a good turn there.
I didn't want to upset people too badly here.
That's right. But yeah, used car salesman that's just there to hustle you into a buy is. And they don't know anything about what's under the hood of the car, for example.
No, but they say they do.
That's right. You have the leg up. You know vehicles, automotive industry from the inside. Mm-hmm. You've tested and broken everything. You've worked with design teams and all the vendors. I would be, even an experienced auto sales guy would be in trouble if you walked up and asked them any questions.
Yeah, that's I tend to have a difficult time with car salesmen because they'll say, well, it'll do this. And I go, no, it won't.
And I know why.
Yeah, and here's why.
That's right. And you're not there to teach them. You're just there to buy a car. It's all right. So anyway, yeah, the people skills in and of itself isn't any good. And vice versa is technical skills in and of themselves. I mean, both are prerequisites, I think. And it's the blending of those things.
So let's go back and forth and maybe share some of the most important things from our experience on the people skills space.
Well, you came up with a nice list right there at the start. And one that jumps out at me is the ability to influence. And that is such a subtle skill. Is oftentimes, as reliability, quality folks, many of the engineering roles that we have, we're not in the spot to say, do it this way, right? Mm-hmm. Even though you have the expertise and say, if you do that, it's going to break. This is why it's going to fail. So part of the influence piece is that, one, you have to build on your technical expertise, that it's obvious you know what you're talking about. You have the evidence. You have the fracture. You have the scanning and acoustic scope of this showing the void. You have the technical backup for it. But instead of going in and say, is a really, really bad example, is, oh, you are an idiot. You don't know what you're doing. You need to fix this. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully everybody in the audience, and hopefully not, you immediately tightened up and went into defensive mode. And if I want to influence their behavior so that they change the design or they alter the selection of the component or whatever, it's probably the absolute worst way to go about doing it.
Yeah.
Right. So go ahead.
So that's a body of knowledge in itself, is how to influence people. There's books on it. And there are courses. And so I agree. That's an important one. I have a bucket of, I'll call it a bucket of habits.
Mm-hmm.
that I've internalized.
You could do the seven habits of successful reliability engineers.
Exactly. I have it right in front of me because somebody wrote me a colleague that said he needed to work on his people skills and what do I recommend. And I pulled out my book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you do one thing, reread or read for the first time or reread that book.
Yeah.
Because if you can internalize those seven habits, it will greatly enhance your ability to work with people and to do a better job of communicating and influencing. So my first answer back on this is to take a fresh look at the seven habits of highly effective people and begin working on them, because they're the kind of habits that you can get better and better and better at. I'll just mention a couple, but I don't want to, we're not doing a tutorial here. But the first one is proactive, and that has guided my life a lot. Mm-hmm. Where you want to be, you want to be less reactive and more proactive. So you want to be able to anticipate problems and prevent them rather than waiting for them to happen and then fixing them when they do. So I think you can take these seven habits, and we could actually write a mini book on the seven habits of highly effective reliability engineers. And the second one, and I'll stop at that one, is begin with the end in mind.
Yep.
And that's something that has influenced me for a lot of my life.
Yep.
Is I used to just begin with the next step. And now after I've studied Stephen Covey, I say, where do we want to be? So I went with a group of people. And so this is why it fits the communication skills, is I'll often say, okay, what's our objective? Where do we want to end up? And get an agreement on that. Then you can start backing up and work with people to do the smaller steps.
Yeah.
So that's a thought.
To build on that, you know, the end in mind, a technique I've run into over the years and I try to use is, you know, one is, what are we trying to accomplish here? Where are we, whether I'm in a meeting or a phone call or starting a project with a client, is what's the objective? What are we trying to accomplish? And then how will we know when we're done? How do we know? Right. If we just spend 4 hours in a meeting, is that mean that we've accomplished our goal? Is it really just fill the time, or is it, are we trying to do something? We're going to have a list, a report, a set of action items, and finish an FMEA, you know, or how will we know we're done? And then the third part is, well, to what level? I mean, to what quality level? What standard are we holding ourselves to judge the quality of what we've accomplished? Because in 4 hours, you and I could crank out an FMEA and we could accomplish creating a study. But if it's not actionable, it's not useful, it's not done with the appropriate level of integrity in it, it's not worth it. So I think to build on that, start with the end in mind, is keep in mind is, well, you still got to measure it. You got to know if you finished or not, and to what criteria, right? So that you're all on the same page. This is why, because you don't want to say, all right, in this meeting, we're going to do an FMEA, and you have five people in the room. They all have a completely different idea of what that is. So it's a part of facilitation is, I think, is part of leading a team. And sometimes you're not the leader. You're not the facilitator. You just ask those three questions. What are we trying to accomplish? How will we know, and to what criteria? And all of a sudden, now you're the leader because you got your act together.
And that's a good thing. This is something to aspire to. Is not everybody can be a leader on the organization chart, but you can be a leader with people to take them where they want to go.
Yep.
And that's such a positive thing. So another thought then is, because I tend to be a little more on the introvert side. I'm sort of in the middle, but I tend to be. And I've had to work in this, the Myers-Briggs, if you're a listener and haven't heard of it, it's worth a Google and a review, because Myers-Briggs will tell you your personality type. And so years ago, I started working on being genuinely more interested in people, mm-hmm, as opposed to things. And I've always been interested in things. That's why, you know, my original education is mechanical engineering, because I love to tear things apart and understand them. And by balancing, by genuinely being interested in people, everybody's different. Everybody has a story. Everybody deserves respect. Everybody can teach you something. If you can be interested in people and then share with them and listen to them, that's a huge step, because then you're coming across with better humility. You can actually reach people better. I think that's the way to influence people, is by be interested in them first. yep. and listen to them before you start speaking yourself.
I totally agree. The part of this technique, the behavior is to meet people where they are, right? If they're trying to solve a problem and you walk up as a reliability engineer and just bring them another problem, which I've had, I did. Ed looked at me and said, his shoulders drooped. He just sighed and goes, another problem.
Yeah.
I said, right. Well, what can I do to help? And he says, you need to bring me solutions. And I says, well, let's sit down. What are the big problems we're dealing with right now? And we went through three of them. And two of them had nothing to do with reliability engineering, but I actually could help. So I started to build a working relationship with this, my key contact in the reliability. He was the designer for this project. I was the reliability engineer on. And so by listening to what was keeping him up at night, is one way to phrase it, and actually being able to make a difference on that, he came to me to ask for advice and help on solving the reliability problems proactively. I wasn't just pestering him for one task or another that I had to do. Started to create a team, and we worked together to solve all kinds of problems. And he was much more willing to listen to me as I built credibility with him that I could actually add value. And I think that's the key part, is we can bring technical skills to bear and add value that way. I think that's a part of being an expert, but it's also helping. You have to add value to the person that they perceive as value. Bringing them a problem may be seen as, oh, we got to solve this, otherwise it's going to cost us $1 million. No, that's not adding value to that person. You got to listen to them and understand what they need and meet them where they are and help them solve the problems they're facing. I'm not the only one trying to solve problems here. We're trying to help them solve problems. And I think adding value and being of service. So I'm going to sneak two of them in here, Carl. It's a mindset, right? Mm-hmm. And it has to be external. You have to look for what's in it for them, not what's in it for me, what's in it for them. And if they are successful, we will be successful. And I think that's the mindset that has to carry this, the influence great. Piece.
Great points. Great points. I have another one, which is builds on that. And I'll just speak to, not everybody is comfortable speaking in front of a group.
Oh, really?
And it's particularly true for our field, which tends to be a technical field.
Yep.
And that, people come out of university and even people that are, in business or companies are not necessarily, it's not natural to speak in front of a group, and it certainly wasn't for me.
So
this is one of those things where you really have to step out of your comfort zone and put yourself in a place, hopefully a safe place. In other words, you don't want your first experiences to be talking to the board of directors, but move yourself to a place from time to time where you're speaking in front of a group. Be prepared. If you have a short presentation, or offer, say, I'd like to talk to the staff meeting on RecorAct subject, could be anything, and then prepare, practice, learn your message. I always say when I talk about speaking, when I try to advise anybody, I say, what about that subject gets you really interested? What builds your passion? Make sure you know what that is. And make that part of what you're saying. So you don't, it's not just rote, it's not just practice, but something you believe in, something you want to share genuinely, and make that part of your pitch. And so whatever it is, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, make sure that you've practiced it and that something about that is something you really believe in and want to share with people, because that's what comes across as passion.
Yep.
And practice, put yourself in the position to speak to groups and then listen to feedback, what people say, and then do it again and again.
Yeah. And it's a good technique to ask somebody you trust that, and you explain to them saying, hey, I want to get better at public speaking. Can you be in the audience and take notes. You know, maybe I'm working on gestures. Maybe I'm working on my voice pattern. Maybe I'm working on some aspect of this presentation. Ask them to give you honest feedback and examples and so on. And ask be specific of what feedback you're looking for and pick one or two things and go with that. It's a great way to then sit down and go, all right, I am serious about this. I want to learn and have somebody that's an objective person that's not there to harm you and say, oh, that was, and they have to know how to provide feedback. But if you give them some coaching of specific things, you know, was, were my gestures timing, were they correct? Were they too big or too small? Or it's hard to know in the moment when you're doing something like that, but having somebody observe you really can be impactful. And so there's a part of this presentation part. There's, I remember I took a course a couple of years ago from EDX it's free. And I guess you can pay for a certificate if you want to, but it was on public speaking. And there's usually one or more courses offered through these different online platforms, and many of them are free from university professors and others that are talking about the elements of good speaking and much of what you talked about, Carl, but they go into details like pacing and voice and story. And I'm taking listening to a course right now on storytelling, right? And it goes everything from family stories to ghost stories to fables to you want to make an impact in a presentation. And many of the techniques of pacing and building suspense and, you know, all of these things that go into what I've seen in other courses that talk about, you know, how does Steve Jobs do his presentations? And he has a consultant that helps him put these things together and coached him on timing, on pacing, on contrasting and all these elements. So there's a lot to it. There is a lot, and you can study it for a long, long time, but even just paying attention and getting feedback and taking one step at a time and getting better and better. There's a lot of resources
available. I like that idea having somebody you trust in the audience and getting genuine feedback. And I do want to say that the public speaking thing does not have to be so formal. In other words, anytime you speak up in a meeting, you're in essence doing public speaking.
That's right.
And so one tip I want to give people is that whenever you're talking to people, what one person, 2, 5, 50, whatever number, talk to individuals, look them in the eye, talk to them with them. Don't just talk to a general audience. And I think it makes a huge difference when I make eye contact with people and I actually go around the room, you know, and just look at different people and talk to them. You can see immediately in their face, it lightens up. There's some, you know, you essentially care about them. You're talking to them. Yep. It's so different than talking to a generality of a group.
Yeah. That's just well, you heard that. I remember in high school, it was, you know, if you're nervous, look over their heads or imagine them all naked or something like that. Yeah. And it was like, you have to get over this and you have to talk to people. You can't talk at them. That doesn't work.
Right.
Oh, we could go on and on just about public speaking. But all of these pieces are with other people. And it includes speaking and coaching and influencing and listening and problem solving and leading and managing. We got so many different terms in and around this thing. But I think in summary, it's listen, you know, be willing to learn, care about the other person and the problems they have. They have a different view on the world than you do. So understand that and then meet them where they are, add value, help them make a difference. When the attitude in my mind is if they're successful, you will be successful.
And just one other comment, and I know we'll wrap up this particular podcast, but setting goals, like if you nobody's perfect on this, any subject at all. And so set a goal for your people skills, your communication skills, and then work towards that goal. In other words, set the smaller goals. You might want to read a book. You might want to do an online course or practice this or do whatever. set those goals and just lay them out, because the more you internalize those goals, the more likely they will be to happen.
That's right. Oh, so we just assigned homework for our podcast listeners.
We did.
We did. So, well, let us know. I mean, we obviously are just scratching the surface on this one. And it, you know, Carl, it might actually make a good to break down a lot of these different things and go into depth on it. But let's ask our listeners, you know, what would you be interested in? Is this resonating with you? Do you see it as a connection into the how to be an expert reliability engineer? And then what areas would you like us to talk about? So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and let us know. We always do sincerely appreciate your feedback and comments and questions. And to a large extent, this whole topic comes from a question that we did receive. So we certainly appreciate that. So with that, Carl, I think we'll, is this a good time to wrap this one up and move on to the technical skills?
I think it is.
All right, good. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.